Welcome to the Science Witch Podcast, where we explore how science and witchcraft intersect, interact, and affirm one another. I'm your co-host, Angel.
And I'm your co-host, James, and this is our 74th episode. And it's our third time inviting author and protection witch extraordinaire Amy Blackthorne on the show.
We are really grateful to have another opportunity to check in with one of our favorite authors and friends of the podcast that I then got to meet in person directly after we recorded this interview at Spirit New Northwest, which took place May 1st through the 4th in Portland, Oregon. I wasn't able to get this episode out before I attended this new metaphysical and spiritual convention in the Pacific Northwest, which is produced by the lovely witches over at That Witch Life. But they are already in the planning stages for next year, so I'll be sure to link it in the show notes for those of you who are interested in attending in 2026.
So this was my first time getting to talk to Amy, and it was a great conversation where we talked about queerness, disability rights, plant magic, and even touched on shadow work and polyamory. Since I only joined the podcast last year, I'm always excited to talk to recurring guests about subjects that I'm passionate about, especially disability rights and how witchcraft can help us survive and even thrive in this late stage capitalism hellscape that we find ourselves in.
Yeah, and being as this is the third time I've invited Amy on the show, I'm always happy to check in with her since the last time we spoke. We talked about what's changed since Amy's last time talking to us, which has been a huge inflection point in human history with the advent of AI and what it's like to be an author in a post-ChatGPT world. She also talked to us about her new books that will be coming out, including her newest writing project, which speaks to a topic many of us are going to find useful in the coming years of seeking our own healing and advocating for our own wellness amongst a confusing convergence of reduced availability of pharmaceuticals, rising cost of medical care, and diminished public health services thanks to our new director of NIH, RFK Jr. Funny story, I actually met RFK Jr. in 2006 when I was president of my university Sierra Club chapter and have a now infamous photo of us together. I feel like this was probably pre-brainworm back when he was actually doing good work for the environmental movement. And as we continue to pass into this age of incompetence in American politics, this image just becomes more and more cursed.
Which is why it's all the more important for us to network, connect, reach out, educate ourselves, and use trusted sources like Amy's books and find ways to still seek joy and connection in these dark times we face ahead. So without further ado, we present to you Return of the Blackthorn with Amy.
Well, welcome everyone to another episode of the Science Witch Podcast. And today we have a repeat guest, one of my favorite guests, obviously, since this is the third time that you've been on the show. Amy. So Amy Blackthorne is back to talk to us about all kinds of things we're gonna chat about today. But Amy, for our listeners who are unfamiliar with your work, could you introduce yourself?
I certainly can. My name is Amy Blackthorne. I have been a professional intuitive, and I've been teaching witchcraft since 1999. I'm so excited. I get to teach all over the world now, and I am really thrilled that I get the opportunity to do what I've always wanted. I wanted a book with my name on it in kindergarten. I didn't know what it was going to be on, but I knew I wanted to write a book. I knew I wanted something that would explain how I felt to the world in a way that I couldn't with my own voice.
It's a big mood.
Yes. I just finished book number 8. So
nice.
I'm definitely having that, like, holy cow, how did that happen?
Yeah, you're an author awesome. Now. Yeah, so I first came upon your work from, I believe it was the Sacred Smoke book, because awesome. At that time I was super into incense, and then we had you on to talk about protection magic, which that was a really intense episode, because came with a bit of a content warning because that was
Yes.
an intense book, but a very, very good book. One of my favorite witchcraft books, I gotta say. And now, since then, you've had, I think, two more books come out?
Three.
Three.
Wow.
Whoa. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Self-care, planets, space sacred plant magic, and social media magic.
Yes. Yeah. And you co-authored the social
Yes.
media magic. Yes.
Yes, with
Yeah.
Natalie Zaman.
So obviously, these were the things that you wanted to bring into the world, but I kind of wanted to ask you what was sort of the reasoning you had behind these latest three books, and what was your thinking as to why you wanted to write them?
I'll start with social media magic because that's the one that has been the furthest to go. When I was writing Blackthorn's Botanical Magic, Natalie and I had a lunch date where we're close in proximity and close emotionally. We were in New Hope, Pennsylvania, wandering around and enjoying catching up. And Natalie was noticing that my one of my Facebook pages was really blowing up at that point. Was had a lot of posts that were getting 2 and 3 and 4 million views and really permeating a lot of news feeds. And so she wanted to say, hey, how can we engage with social media in a responsible way? How can we create the antidote for toxic social media? How can we help people embrace their own identity as witches, but really embrace some of the tools that we have available to us right now? And so social media magic was born so many years ago. We were really excited about it, and I said, I love this idea, I want to do this with you. But I was smack dab in the middle of my first book, and I was at that point, I was convinced no one was going to let me write another book, that I was just going to sell 5 copies and I would fade into obscurity and that would be it. And people really are enjoying what I have to say and what I think about things, and that is just the most incredible. It's not just a good feeling, it's incredible to have people understand the things that I want to bring to the universe and bring to the practice of witchcraft in a way that really makes me feel seen and heard and allows people who read my books to feel connected to what I'm talking about. So we came back to it after I finished Protection Magic. I needed something light, I needed something sweet. And so I was able to work with Natalie, and we created Social Media Magic, or Social Media Spellbook, 366 Ways to Get Witchy on the Web. And so it's set up as a magical calendar. You can jump in at any point. You can jump in on August 1st or January 1st or October 31st. So
Yeah.
I made sure we included February 29th because it's still a day.
It
A very
is.
important day for angels specifically.
Yes. Yeah. And yeah, I'm glad that you did that because I've throughout my life had many times when people didn't, and I've broken programs, I've caused errors in systems. Yeah. It does. It's still a day. People do get born on it.
Yeah, shockingly, it is true.
So my dear friends, we came to the book on self-care was actually written at the same exact time that Social Media Spellbook was being written. I was trying to figure out a way to hack my ADHD, and so when I would have one progress stop, I would procrastinate by switching to the other text right until I came to a stopping point, then switch back. And so I wrote two books at the same time, the same days, the same months.
That's a great tactic.
I was onto something there.
Yeah.
The idea for self-care, I mean, I was at a I had a near-death experience about 20 years ago, and I died, and it was a very painful, very long recovery, and I still deal with it to this day. But it was really important for me to make sure that I had the ability to share some of the things that I learned about chronic pain, about self-care, and about being a witch who needs ADHD medication or needs antidepressant medication or needs long-term care. The prevalent theories at that time were, well, you can't work magic if you're on medication. That's a bunch of hooey. No.
Ableist fucking BS.
Yes, exactly. And the amount of ableist BS we see even at the moment really strikes me in the community. I want to make sure that people understand, hey, disabled people exist.
Well, you know
Handicapped
that.
people exist. Like we are witches.
Yeah, the
When
three of
you look
us
at the numbers,
on this call are here to toot that horn for sure.
40% 40% of Americans have at least one disability, have at least one chronic illness. And people
That's
think, oh, it's such
insane.
a small number. No, it's almost half of the population.
No, we've all got something, even if it's like a food allergy or one pill that you have to take for your acid reflux or whatever. Everyone's got something.
Everybody's got something. And so it was really important to not only explain to neurotypical people or people who didn't have mobility issues, hey, this is important for the entire community, not just you. There was this idea that, it's only 1 or 2% of the population. No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
It's really shameful how we've, I mean, the reason people have that kind of perception is because we've pushed disabled people to the fringes. We've pushed them into care homes instead of having, like family members be taking care of their disabled family member. We've done it to ourselves, and that's why we don't see as much disability in our world, and that's why we think it's such a small number.
Oh yeah, I was in a rehab hospital for months after my impact, we'll call it. And I was the youngest person there by 40 years.
Believe it.
And it was shameful to see the number of guests in that hospital versus the number of visitors. I was there over the holidays and you saw visitors on exactly one day, and that was Christmas Day. Those people are there 366 days of the year. And one day they're going to say, oh, well, let's go visit Nana in the home. Let's do our good. Pat yourself on the back now.
Great.
I did 300 hours of community service volunteering while I was in the hospital recovering on my own.
Wow. That's such the truth of what it is first on the front lines is disabled people helping other disabled people,
Yes.
always.
Yeah. Every time.
Yep. This isn't really on topic, but the longest sit-in protest that was ever, you probably know, was at the San Francisco. Shoot, I like wrote an article about this and I can't remember any of it. Protesting for disability rights before the ADA existed. And it was like a 30, somewhere around 30 day sit-in protest.
And the number of people who cr literally crawled on their arms up the steps to protest the treatment of disabled people, like, and you can still see the black and white photographs. You can look them up online. People who were paraplegic just literally crawling up those steps to be seen is one of the most powerful images I've ever seen.
Absolutely. Never
It's
ceases to
powerful.
amaze me.
The day that I got out of the hospital, I had been in the hospital for months. I'd been in a wheelchair for months, and I just needed to get out of the house and be outside, be around people. I was stuck in a room by myself for months on end. So I said, hey, I said to my partner, can we go to the mall? I would like to be around people. And the first thing I wanted to do was to go in Victoria's Secret and sniff all the pretty smells. And I didn't have any money. I'd been in the hospital for months. I'm like,
Forget about
guess what? I was not at work.
it.
And the first thing that happened was a woman came up and introduced herself to me, asked if I wanted to, hear about their daily sales or whatever she was spewing. And I'm looking up at her from my wheelchair, and I reached down to scratch my leg. I was wearing jeans. I was super, super excited that I was able to fit jeans over all of the apparatuses that were attached to my body.
Imagine.
The scars on my leg were just barely peeking out the bottom cuff of my pant leg, and I reached down to scratch my foot, and she looked down at my leg with jeans on, full length, bootcut jeans. Looks down at my leg in horror and says, that is the most disgusting thing I have ever seen in my whole life. If I wanted to see something like that, I'd have become a nurse. Put it away.
Real.
I tried to get my partner to go get her name, get something, so I would talk to somebody. Turns out she was the manager.
Of fucking course she was.
Of course she was. I've never been back.
Yeah,
I,
fuck
never,
them.
never, never.
I
I had
mean,
to go, I had to threaten to sue at the corporate level because
Good for
The
you.
district manager and her were buddies. I complained to another store manager in another state who made excuse. Oh, that's just her sense of humor.
No.
And it was, I had to threaten to sue
Jeez.
at the corporate level to get this woman fired. Like, they
Wow. Good
offered
for
me a free
you.
makeover. Are
Oh,
you
what do you
kidding?
fucking do? That's
My self-worth is
yeah.
more than a lipstick sample.
Come on. Yeah. They're always gonna try to offer you some kind of free shit and money to try to buy you off.
And
Yeah.
it's just, it's so hard to just exist in this post-capitalist or late stage capitalist
Hellscape.
hellscape that we live in, especially those of us who are Americans, because right now it is really fucking hard just to wake up in the morning and be like, all right, what new fresh horrors are visited upon us? And
Literally
having
every
a
day.
way to reconnect with the things that make our lives worth living and magical is so important right now. I mean, that's been sort of our perennial theme on the podcast, is just helping all of our fellow queerdos and witches out there remember our magic in this time of just unparalleled shittiness. Like every day, something else occurs to just make me so angry and exhausted and frustrated. And there's so little support for people with disabilities. I know James has really been struggling. My husband, he has fibromyalgia, he has migraines, he has various different stomach issues that have made it to where he's very, like, it's very difficult for him to be able to keep a full-time job. And yet there's just no way that at this point, because he doesn't have a very visible disability, he could access the support. And this is the same for millions and millions of Americans. And we don't have any kind of real good social structure to help us out. I mean, I was seeing on one of the local communities, this woman had given birth and she was hospitalized and ended up losing her apartment and was living in a car with her newborn. And it's just like, that's what happens in this society, this broken late stage capitalist hellscape, is that we're so beaten down by everything that's going on that we can't even take care of the most marginalized members of our society. And it sucks. But that's why I think this message of like connecting to our magic is so important, because I do feel like the tower is coming down.
Yeah, this is the reason that Blackthorn sacred plant magic was so important, because we need the ability to connect with beings outside of ourselves to help come up with new
Absolutely.
solutions to the problems that we're facing. By each chapter is broken up into a different way to communicate with plant spirits, from making a flower elixir to creating consumable goods like foods. People think, oh, I don't know any plants. I can't possibly practice green witchcraft. I can't do. Do you cook? Absolutely. Go to your spice cabinet, find some plants in your spice cabinet. Are you a coffee person? Go and make coffee where you are at. Go meet tea where you're at. Find out the ways that you can bridge those gaps between where you are and where they are. You're going to meet where you find yourselves in the middle. The plants that we are engaging with, the plants that we are understanding and learning about, have such incredible things to teach us. And if we aren't listening, guess what? That's it. They only have so many opportunities to communicate with us. If you're not willing to sit down and be quiet for just a moment, you'll miss it out.
And we need
Yeah.
them.
We
We need
do.
them so
Sure
much right
do.
now. I actually got my Master Gardener's certification, and it felt like I was getting divine instruction that I was to learn everything I can about plants and then share it with my community. And that is definitely what I feel is part of my great work, because now I know how to graft root trees. Now I know how to correctly compost stuff. Now I know how to grow asparagus in such a way that you can have a reliable crop for 40 years to feed your family. These are all skills I've gained through the participation in Master Gardeners. And I know I feel very strongly that as we continue on this trajectory in this mundo malo that we have found ourselves in, that it's going to become so much more important to have localized food sources and be connected to our natural plant allies. So I haven't gotten a chance to has the book been published yet?
Oh yeah, it came out Labor Day
Okay.
weekend.
Labor Day
Oh,
weekend.
fantastic.
Yeah, I gotta get a copy of it because it's synergistic to what I have been feeling really hard lately, especially after the election, where people need gardening, people need to learn how to grow their own food, and it needs to be accessible to as many people as possible because once we start having all these supply chains break down and we're not able to access the same global network of food that we had before, which is coming, then we're going to have to figure out either how to supplement our diets with what we grow ourselves or starve. And that's been something that I've really felt in the marrow of my bones that is the great work for us right now as witches living in this moment.
One of the things that was important to connect with is there's been a resurgence in interest in poisonous plants, and a lot of people going out to find ways to ingest poisonous plants without any instruction or understanding of what those very potent allies are looking to accomplish. And
Yeah.
so there's I introduced them into a way to work with the spirit of that plant without any physical plant material in contact with them. That
Yeah.
way, there's no risk of poisoning. There's no risk of a trip to the hospital, but you're going to understand what these plants have to offer. If you want to work with cannabis, but it's get tested at work. Here's a way that you can create a sigil for the spirit of this plant, how you can meet this plant in its own way and time. There's also a recipe for edibles, but not everybody has access to legal, safe marijuana. There's got to be ways that we can interact with these spirits. And when we get to that point where people say, okay, I can really do this, that opens up to so much because you can work with plants outside your state, outside your region, outside your biome, and outside your epoch. You can interact with plants that have been essentially gone for thousands of years and understand them. You can learn from each other. And we see this every day. People say, oh, I don't know, it's been extinct forever. How is that a thing? You can go to Lowe's or Home Depot right now. It's spring outside. At least they tell me it's spring outside. But you can go into your local garden center and find pine berries. You're walking through the fruits and vegetables, and you see something that looks suspiciously like a strawberry, but it's bone white with red seeds as opposed to red with white seeds. Pine berries were found, goodness, maybe 10 years ago. They were found in a dig that was about 30,000 years old. They were sealed in a jar, found in the dig, and they said, hey, let's see if we can germinate these seeds. And lo and behold, not only did they germinate, but they were able to rapidly reproduce, and we can have those pine berries today as the progenitor for the strawberry line. It doesn't taste anything like what you picture in your head about what a strawberry tastes like. It tastes like pineapple. It doesn't taste like strawberry at all.
Incredible.
But it's got these beautiful white fruits. It spreads like nobody's business. You can have a crop that will come back every spring, come back every fall, and you have the ability to find those vitamins that you're going to be lacking because the price of oranges is $20 an orange.
Yeah,
That's
and
incredible.
finding a sacred connection is a way I feel to help reconnect what we've lost in capitalism. When you can remember and connect to the sacredness of a plant through all these different means, it helps to not only make your life more magical, but also nourish us in a way that capitalism has stolen from us. Capitalism wants you to have no connection to your food. It is just something that is a commodity that you pay for and then you consume. There's not this more thoughtful and spiritual connection to it. And as witches, it helps us to not only reconnect with our own magic, but also become much more in touch with the world of the unseen, the spirits, the numinous things that makes our lives interesting and also worth living. And then the more we learn about something, the more we understand it, the more we can share that knowledge. And so, yeah, I think that's such an important thing right now. And it came out right before the election, but now it's like even more important since the election to bring into the world. So also, I wanted to talk to you about something that's changed since you were last on the show. I think you were last on the show in 2023. And since then, we've had the advent of AI. And that has been wow, that has changed a lot of things in both our society. And I know a lot of writers have had to contend with AI, both like plagiarizing their work and also helping to educate people about the misinformation that AI is putting out there. So I wanted to open that topic up to you and ask you, how has the advent of AI changed the occupation of being a writer for you?
It makes it very difficult, not because I use or don't use it. I think that it's theft. It's flat out theft. There's no such thing as AI as people understand it. It's a language learning model, and you have
It's a
to
language
teach
learning
it
model.
by
It's generative
putting
AI.
in input. My work, seven of my books have been in that LibGen upload that was teaching Google how and Meta how to create their generative platforms, their generative materials. So my work is in that material forever. There's no way to extract it back out. I'm glad that there's a class action lawsuit pending because, you know, millions of people and have had their work stolen. And that is absolutely theft. But I want to make sure that people understand that there's no way for that, what we currently understand as a language learning model, it's not AI yet. If we stop feeding it the materials for people who are giving their livelihood, guess what? You'd still be able to have people like me make a living. You can have artists, you can have authors, you can have people, because what we're seeing now is people saying, "Oh, I can just have ChatGPT write a book for me and I could publish it on Amazon." It's crap, and you can tell that it's crap when you're reading it. It's not that it's bad, because it is bad, but it's so bad to the point where you can tell right off the bat that that's what happens because of the word pacing, because of the tone, because of the voice that it has is so singular. You absolutely know if you've read more than two pieces that have been generated through AI, you can tell right away. Professors, artists, authors, we can tell just by glancing at the screen, oh yeah, that's a no. That's not it. It got to the point where this was happening when Natalie and I were writing Social Media Spellbook. She said, "Do we include AI generated spells? Do we talk about this?" I said, "Well, we're going to talk about it because it's happening, but this is you cannot create a reliable spell because these are language learning models. You can feed anything into it and you get garbage back out. There's no way for you to know unless you know what's right and what's wrong in what some in a spell that ChatGPT is going to spit out at you. You need the understanding and the experience of someone standing over your shoulder and saying, 'Hey, this is right and that's wrong,' and books give that to you. ChatGPT cannot do it because it's giving you information, whether it's right or wrong, you don't know until you actually dig into it. But you can't just take it for granted that this is something that works and that something is available to us because it's theft. It is outright theft.
It truly
And some
blows
of
my mind that the whole point is to like engage with art. What are we as humans if we're not the ones making the art and engaging with the art? And it's the same for spells, right? It's like what is even the point of it if you're not, as a human, like you said, reading books of people that wrote things down before by other humans, not by some language learning model. What's even the point?
That's the thing. Magic is agency, and you have to have the experience of having agency to be able to understand what that means to a human person.
Yeah. And some of the information coming out of these AI written books is dangerous. I know in the mushroom foraging community, there are some AI generated mushroom books that got published that have dangerous misinformation about what mushrooms are to eat. And the whole thing with poisonous plants, Amy, where you talk about them in your latest book, that information is it's very important to have it from a good source. And that where we are right now is they started having to where the information that they generate, especially when you do the search bar, it'll show you the sources on it. But at the same time, you need to be able to vet these sources, especially when you're talking about something as potentially dangerous as poisonous plants or mushrooms. And AI is just taking this information and it's putting it in a blender and then spitting it back out, and it's killing people. There are people who now who have died because of these mushroom hunting books that had misinformation in them. And we're seeing the same thing with witchcraft, where I think Laura Tempest Sakharov was talking about this AI generated author that was publishing these witchcraft books that was basically just taking all of the witchcraft book and chopping them up and putting them back together. And the information was just wrong. It was just, it's not valid. It's not from any kind of actual tradition. And I will say, I like having AI for boring things. Like I used it to generate my waiver for my yoga class. That is one of the good things I've used it for. And
That's the kind of stuff it should be for.
like technical manuals. But you always have to go back over that information. You can't just generate it and then think that the AI did everything.
Knows what
So
it's talking about. Right.
there's still a human element that needs to happen. And a lot of people just think that they could just generate it and then it's good to go. And it's like, no, that's not the point.
When people started experimenting with and working with it, they had lawyers who were trying to generate drafts, and the language learning model was generating fake court cite statistics, fake case law to cite in these courts, and it's like there's not really a source because this is made up. I mean, it's Jones versus Smith et al. Blah, 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 blah. It's not a real case. It never happened.
It did the same thing with scientific papers. It generated fake scientific papers.
When we look at this, the most dangerous part of that is that what is the difference between poison and medicine? Dose.
Right?
Period. I mean,
Sure.
if you aren't really on the money, guess what? People are going to die, and people are going to keep dying if you don't figure out a way to generate a way for people to discern more quickly what is generated by a computer and what is generated by an actual expert in the field.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And the way that people have just been wholesale outsourcing things to AI is so lazy. It's not really helping us. That's the thing. It's like these AI, these generative models, they take up so much resources, they take so much power to keep constantly be generating. And then the end result is things that are literally destroying the ability for us to be able to exist in this, again, late stage capitalist hellscape. It's stolen jobs. Hasbro laid off a ton of D&D writers because they were like, oh, well, we could just get AI to write all the D&D books. And unlike, I think the only writers who have actually managed to protect their intellectual property from the AI so far have been the Screenwriters Guild, which they
Makes
had
sense.
to go on strike for what, like 6, 7 months, which was devastating. I can tell you, I know quite a few people in the movie industry, and it was devastating for them to have to be out of work that long. But that was the only way they were going to be able to save their intellectual property. And that same protection is not available to a lot of other writers. So like gaming book writers, that was just something that they just took the AI. And then AI is being used to screen people's resumes so
Yeah,
that
God,
we are.
tell me about it.
And so literally human beings are being harmed so much by this technology, and yet there's not any more consideration about who this actually is helping and what it's actually doing for us as both a species and a society.
Especially when you have to consider the impacts. They had to reactivate 3 Mile Island just to power this language learning model for Google. An
Yeah.
entire nuclear power plant. Actually, there was two, but I couldn't remember which where the other one was. But 3 Mile Island, that was famous for having a Chernobyl-like meltdown,
Yep.
and you're reactivating it to power Google's generative language learning model.
Yeah.
Bonkers. Absolutely
Yeah.
bonkers. And,
Yeah.
it's tough because, like we were saying, there are menial tasks that we should be able to ask ChatGPT to do for us. Like you're talking about the problem with job searching right now, which is what I'm facing right now, is AI's reading my resume, not even a real human looking over my resume to determine if I'm hireable or not. But like I should be able to get ChatGPT to write a cover letter for me or whatever. And then I will read it and I will personalize it as needed. But like
Yeah.
if I'm, let's just say it, deep in depression and like don't have the wherewithal to write myself a cover letter, I should be able to have a generative AI write something for me and then I will go back over it and, like I said, kind of personalize it to my actual self. But instead, we're stealing from authors and stealing people's art and making these generative AIs that are creating bad art.
We're stealing from the future generations who have to
Yes.
deal with the nuclear
Yes.
fallout from reactivating entire nuclear power plants just to power this. The
Right.
environmental impact alone, I mean,
Environmental.
7,000 gallons of water, how, I mean, this is,
Truly staggering, absolutely
yes.
mind-boggling. And here we are. I don't want to say totally powerless, but kind of totally powerless. Even if you and you and you, the three of us on this call, never use ChatGPT again, the rest of the world isn't necessarily going to stop using it.
Yeah, and it is something I think about. I'm constantly thinking about the world that they're going to inherit and what it's going to be
Yeah.
like. And it some days I feel a little more optimistic than others, but a lot of times I just like my heart hurts for them because for one thing I find that their attention spans are just
Shot.
completely like shot. Like they have no ability to stay focused on anything except technology and video games. And that's about the only thing you can get them to stay focused on. One of the things they talk about is in education, what will likely happen is that AIs, like personalized AIs, will supplement their individual education program, so IEPs. Right
Right.
now, the kids with a lot of learning disabilities, they have IEPs that people have to help them with. But as we continue to both slash our education budget to where we're not going to be able to afford instructional assistance to help individual kids, AI is going to have to pick that up. And so basically, these kids are going to be learning how to be a human from these AIs. I mean, they
Yet again,
already
we're
learn.
talking about how disabled people are kind of the forefront of like who gets impacted by these changes.
Yeah. So kids that have a lot of learning disabilities or problems with being able to keep up with the regular classroom, they'll have like an AI that will is supposed to teach them everything. And in some ways, this is going to be helpful and useful, but in other ways, this is going to just continue to disadvantage these children in ways that we can't even imagine. It's kind of a dark scenario. Yeah, I mean, all we can do is just continue to advocate for people like you, Amy, that have had their work stolen.
Well, and that's to kind of bring it back to you're talking about like plant magic and stuff, being able to engage with life, real live things, and not just these language learning models that are, it's all just code and huge generators on 3 Mile Island or whatever. We need to get back to engaging with real life things, real other humans, and also the other kinds of life in our environs.
We were already having people say, "Well, why do you need to farm? You could just go to the grocery store and buy food."
They're gonna find out.
I saw a woman on TikTok say, "Oh my God, I had no idea you could just eat fruit off of a tree. I didn't know you didn't have to do anything to it first." She's like holding an orange, and she's completely mystified by the orange that she's holding that she grew from a seed.
Yeah.
The divorce that we have experienced, both as witches and as Americans, between where our food comes from and how that gets to your body is completely mind-boggling. The fact
Yeah.
that people don't understand where food comes from. Like I can remember being in kindergarten and finding my first mint plant and experiencing that spice as a kindergartner, but these are grown people.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. And I mean, we can't discount the food deserts and things that exist when people live in inner cities and stuff, and they simply don't get the opportunity to engage with natural food growing and stuff like that. It's not
Absolutely. I grew up in
necessarily
Baltimore
their
City.
fault.
The closest grocery store was a few blocks away. And so we had a 7-Eleven on the corner. We could go and get very, very few staples. But if you needed actual food, you're gonna make some distance to it. You're gonna have to figure out a way to get there and how to get your materials back. My mother had one of those carts to carry the groceries because she had four kids. You can't leave them home by themselves. Let's go to the grocery store, and everybody troops off because we were living below the poverty line. We didn't have a vehicle. We didn't have the way to get around other than our feet. And Baltimore City has a lot of food deserts.
You know from firsthand experience how it is.
That's another way that connecting people to plants, to that magic, helps heal what capitalism has stolen from us. And I just keep coming back around to that whole we need plants.
Can I tell you a secret? Since
Sure.
it's just us in here. I just turned in my eighth manuscript.
Nice.
And so it'll come out
Exciting.
March of 2026. It's a book on shadow work. It's a
Ooh.
book on generating these relationships with plants to have them help you go and create ways to feel safe doing your shadow work with these plant allies. What can these plants tell you? How can we heal the rift between yourself and the pieces of yourself that have broken off and that have been missing for your entire life? And how can these plant allies guide you to back to yourself? If you meet Corpse Flower in your inner landscape, what can Corpse Flower help you bring death to? What is come time to die? What is something you can let go of to make room for something new and beautiful and living and breathing and growing? And how do we heal those rifts within ourselves and with our relationships with plants? And so it teaches you every step of the way how to do that and how to really figure out what's the best way to take those pieces of ourselves back.
So I did want to talk about on that topic, shadow work is so it's become one of the buzzwords in the witchcraft community and gets tossed around, but a lot of people don't understand what it really means. I know both you and I identify as polyamorous, and one of the things about being poly is that there's a lot of introspection and self-work that goes into the endeavor of learning how to love multiple people. And can you maybe talk about that? What your feelings are about shadow work and why you think it's so important for anyone and everyone to approach these topics, whether you're poly or not.
Absolutely. When we talk about polyamory, people sort of have this mental block about loving more than one person, and they throw up the jealousy card like it's a safe, it's a life jacket. And that's not how you don't want to be. It's not
It's so
fair to your
sad.
partner to expect them to be your one and only person for everything you've ever experienced. People have no problem having more than one friendship and more than one friend at work, your best friend here, your cousin that you're friends with, whatever it is. It shouldn't be the life jacket. It shouldn't be the armor that protects you against the way that we're looking at ourselves versus the way that other people are seeing us. We should all, every person, whether you're asexual, demisexual, monogamous, polyamorous, everybody should want to be a better person for the people around them, whether they're in romantic relationships or not. But more specifically, when we offer ourselves the ability to really accept the pieces of ourselves that we don't want to look at, that makes it so much easier for the rest of the people that are involved in our lives to see who we really are. And I'm not just, three coping mechanisms and a trench coat anymore.
That's three coping mechanisms in a trench coat is so good. Oh man, that's real.
It's a vibe.
But, I end up being everyone's go-to when they're like, oh, polyamory, let me Angel's in a throuple. Let's talk to Angel about polyamory. And I'm like, okay, number one, it's not for everybody. And number two, understand that you do a lot of work on yourself in order to get to a place, for one, where you don't feel poly people still get jealous. The difference is we develop mechanisms to both hold space for ourselves and be able to communicate our needs. Because usually jealousy, at the root of jealousy, is an unmet need. And
Yes.
then being able to go through that process of, okay, what is the need that I am feeling that is being unmet? And then communicating that to your partner in a way that isn't blaming them. And yeah, you don't have to be poly to do this work. When you approach a relationship as every day, I'm going to show up and I'm going to cherish that person, regardless of whether or not we're married or on the relationship escalator, that just changes things. Because I tend to find, and I've seen this happen with a lot of people that are in monogamous relationships, they stop cherishing each other. They stop caring about what each other wants or what their interests are, and it just becomes this obligatory thing where they're married and they're in a relationship, but they're not in love with each other and they don't cherish one another. And then inevitably that will lead to divorce. And then it feels like, oh, this relationship was a failure. And again, that's another thing that polyamory has helped me understand is sometimes relationships need to change and that's okay. It's not that the relationship was a failure, it's just the needs were different. And if you continue to approach things like that, it makes ending relationships, or at least in the form of romantic relationships, so much less devastating. And at the same time, it causes so much less suffering. There's so many times where I'm watching a movie. We just watched Funny People, me and my partner Rick. And that movie, there's this part where polyamory could have just been the solution. You don't have to pick one or the other. They meet different needs in you. You can be with both. And I just end up saying that a lot. Just be
Yeah.
poly, but
Just be
also
poly.
like,
It's so real.
not everyone needs to be poly. And it's just that the things that poly has taught me, I feel it's been the way that I have engaged with shadow work the most, because it has taught me how to release so many things in my life that caused me suffering, and understanding that, for one, just because you're in a relationship with someone doesn't mean that you own them, that you're
Oh,
not
God.
entitled to them. And that is, especially for cishet men, is so hard for them, because they think, oh, when they come into polyamory, they, oh, I get to have sex with all these women, and I could still be married and have my mom wife take care of me and everything. And it's like, no, that is not what it is. It's you don't own, or you are not entitled to your partner. You choose your partner and you show up for your partner, and the love they give you is almost like a byproduct of that. It's not something you are entitled to. And when somebody else is with your partner, that's not them taking it from you. And that's such a it that step right there. Every especially cishet man that I've known that has made the that has actually done the work to disentangle all of this patriarchal bullshit that has taught them that they somehow own their spouse's affection and bodies. Once they get past that, it just creates far less suffering in their lives. And yeah, I mean, I didn't want this to be like an episode all about polyamory, but
It's not.
you know,
the, the shadow work is so important to do because the more that you are able to sit down and be with your feelings and understand, okay, why am I having this feeling? And also, what is it connected to? And then communicating it. It just revolutionizes. It's just like such a game changer.
Can I give you an example?
Yes,
Course.
absolutely.
So I have been struggling with my identity as an author and missing the approval of my parents. I still want it, even though I know that that's not something I'm ever going to get. And so I'm like, how can I let go of this desire for something that A, I know I'm not ever going to get from B, someone I've cut contact with. I haven't spoken to my mother in 8 years and my father in, we'll say 22 years.
Wow.
How can I get over this feeling? And so I had to sit with it and figure out, okay, what does this look like? What's happening? What's the mechanism behind it? And I finally realized that as a child of a narcissistic parent, I'm constantly reaching out saying, okay, like, can I have a crumb of understanding or approval or something? Like, here, please. And I finally realized that because that is the way that she's built, that's not something I can ever, ever have. And I got to the point where I was like, okay, once I realized that this isn't something that I can control, I will never, ever be good enough for this woman because I can't be because of the narcissism that lives in her brain. There's no way for me to possibly get to be good enough to earn that respect or love or affection or care or nurturing or whatever the word that you're looking for is. So it took so much pressure off of myself to be able to say, I cannot meet the standard, therefore I'm going to let it go.
Yeah.
That was so impactful.
It's it very antithetical to the way that we're taught as Americans, I think. It's impressive and laudable to be able to reach that place of saying, I'm never going to reach that, and therefore I let go of those feelings because we have such perform to the utmost of your ability.
Pull yourself up by the
Blah,
bootstraps.
blah, blah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I knew that writing this book was going to be difficult, but I honestly didn't understand how difficult it was going to be to go through these exercises myself and actually do the work while writing the book. It actually took 6 months longer than it was supposed to because I had to do the work while writing the work. And my goodness, that was a terrible idea. No,
But
I'm glad that I really got some of those insights that I've been working so hard towards.
yeah, important, but probably excruciating at the same time.
Yes. People talk about how
Yeah.
hard shadow work is, and so that makes them not want to do it. And so the point of botanical magic or botanical shadow work was to give someone an ally to go with them to do the work. We can't do the work for you, but
Yeah.
I can introduce you someone who's going to hold your hand while you do this work.
Right. And once you go through it, once you confront your shadow, you have tea with your demons, you are able to make peace with all these parts of yourself that you felt shame and guilt around. Coming through that process, it really is just one of those things that will be a turning point in your life. When I was able to really have the introspection and space to understand myself through doing the shadow work that I had to in order to become polyamorous and understand what it is to have a secure relationship, I just became so much of a happier person. And when you love somebody who does have some malignant narcissism, it helps to be able to understand, okay, this person, I have to love them from afar. It took me a lot of shadow work and ability to love from afar because it's not safe for me to be in close proximity to this person because of just the malignant narcissism makes it so difficult. And the fact that they were not able to ever stop and have this introspection in themselves is also more of the reason. Is the thing is with narcissism, they never think that they're the problem and they refuse to acknowledge it. And they're always going to put blame on on you, the person that's trying to love them. And so, and shadow work can help you disentangle that. It can help you like step back from that, you know, shadow work and therapy, which therapy is, of course, awesome. Get therapy. But as once again, those of us
Capitalist
who happen,
hellscape.
capitalist hellscape called the United States of America, we can't really access it. And so, in lieu of that, educating ourselves on this and then also bringing that spiritual component of witchcraft into it as shadow work is, I think, just yeah, it's such an important message for all of us out there. I wanted to talk about another thing about protection magic, and then, of course, now that we've brought up the shadow work and how you feel that these are topics and lessons that we can bring with us to help us survive this late stage capitalist hellscape.
When we talk about protection magic, people have this idea that it's spells and it's candles and we just sort of think good thoughts, and that is an aspect of protection magic. But what was really important to me was making sure that the way that we physically protect our bodies was also impressed upon us, because no matter what we go through, no matter what we experience in our lifetimes, we're always responsible for as much as we can do. And the best way to protect ourselves is to have situational awareness and understand where we are and what we're doing. But that does not mean that we are responsible for the choices that other people make. Someone has accosted you, it is not your fault. It doesn't matter what you were wearing, where you were walking, what you do for work, that does not matter. The person who committed a crime against you is the problem. So do we give up? Absolutely not. What we're doing is we're trying to make ourselves as safe as possible, because if there was one fix all for all of this, guess what? There'd never be any crime ever again. If just saying murder is against the law worked, then guess what? We'd never have another murder ever again. So we're just doing the best we can in everything, in all aspects of our lives, not just magical, but physical, emotional, spiritual. All I want to do is to make sure people have the most tools they can to get home safe, whether it's making sure that you let your friends know where you are at night, or turning on the location apps on your phone, or checking in with people who you care about. But how do I know if someone's following me on the way home? What do I do if somebody is following me? How do I approach that if I'm on foot? How do I approach that if I'm in a car? What threat level is something I should let someone know about? Those are the really scary things, because if this is something that happens so often, what is paranoia and what is real lived experience? So you have to be able to understand where the dividing line is. And the best thing I can tell you is that dividing line lives in under your skin. If the hair on your arms is standing up, if the hair on the back of your neck is standing up, even if you can't explain it to someone, you don't have to. One of the things that people say so often is that, I just had a feeling and I couldn't explain it to you, but I just knew. Listen to that voice, because especially as a neurodivergent person, you're processing 200% more information than someone who is even in your sleep. So if something is causing a violent reaction in your body, in your heart, in your skin, in your mind, even if you can't justify it, listen to that voice, because there's something going on, even if you can't articulate why.
Absolutely. I believe in that so strongly that it's a weird thing that having been raised Mormon carries over, even though I left the church when I was 18, because they talk about the still small voice of, like, for them, it's the Holy Ghost or whatever. But like, there is something about that still small voice inside you that, like you said, that's your intuition. That's your, like you're saying, for neurodiverse people, we're processing a lot of input to make a evaluation of a situation. And sometimes the way that that manifests is, like you said, the hairs on the back of your neck, you get a bad feeling, and you should listen to it. I very strongly believe that.
Yeah, in this society, it's even more important that trans people develop this because it's so dangerous to be trans, even in places where it is more progressive. It's still very dangerous to be trans. And so, yeah, that's another thing about just having that situational awareness and understanding and being able to tap into your intuition and know when things are unsafe. Yeah. Very important. Yeah. Well, I'm really excited about this shadow workbook that you have coming out. And I definitely am going to have to contact your publicist. Yes. Publicist to get a copy of it. 'Cause yeah, I'm excited to hear more about that. And I know that you're coming out here to my neck of the woods for a conference, which by the
Yes.
time this episode comes out will probably have already happened because it's happening next week from the time we're recording this. But yeah, can you talk a little bit about what you're going to be out here doing and what are you looking forward to about it?
I am giving the keynote, one of the keynote speeches during the conference, and I'm talking about protection as a magical defense in the current economic hellscape, and how we can keep ourselves safe as witches, especially in rural areas, less progressive areas, more conservative areas. What are the things that we have done, can do, and how does this affect where we are standing magically?
Spirit Northwest. It's a new metaphysical witchy conference that's happening in Portland. And it's being put on by the witches of That Witch Life. So I'm really excited that I get to meet you in person.
I'm so
And
excited.
I know we talked quite a bit through the podcast and now I finally get to meet you in person and yeah, show you my home turf a little bit. All right. Well, Amy, before we close out, was there anything else you wanted to share with the listeners and let them know that you are going to be having coming up?
I know that in August I'll be in DC. There's actually a largest book conference in North America happening in DC the second week in August, so the around the 15th. I am super excited. They're expecting 10,000 people a day, and
Wow.
I'll be speaking about self-defense for main characters for that. You'll actually be able to buy all of the books that I have available. So if you're in the DC area, if you're local to the East Coast, it's definitely worth checking out. The Gaylord is a great venue for big. I mean, that's where the DC Comic Con is, and other really, really large events are going to be there. So 10,000 people a day, all book readers. We're going to have fantasy balls, and it's going to be a really enjoyable, relaxing couple of days.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's
Yeah.
for some reason for me, relaxing and 10,000 people a day don't mix.
Definitely won't be for me, but maybe somebody. If you want to check out Blackthorn's Protection Magic or any of my other books, you can check out the first 30 pages or so, free to download at amyblackthorn.com.
Nice.
Awesome.
Nice. Awesome. And I saw that you were editing a podcast. What was that about?
Oh, my Blackthorn, the Blackthorn Grove, we're in the sixth season. I finally had an interview where someone said, "Oh, I should not have said that thing. Could you cut that out?" So I had to teach myself GarageBand editing on the fly. It took about 4 hours, but I was reasonably proud of what I had accomplished in those 4 hours.
Heck yeah.
So you can check out the Blackthorn Grove. I just dropped a new episode today, listening to reader mail and answering some questions about witchcraft. There's lots of different interviews with other notable pagans, and I'm super excited if you check out some of the panel episodes, and it's just a lot of fun. It's me getting to hang out with more authors and giving them a piece of the platform.
Love that.
Sweet. Awesome. All right. Well, Amy, thank you so much for coming on for your third time. And I'm sure there will be a fourth time as well, since You're one of my favorite people to talk to on the podcast. So, yeah, thank you once again. Thank you so much to Amy for once again coming on our show to talk about her work and let our listeners know about what new offerings she has in store for us. I'm sure she'll be back on for future episodes, as we certainly need the resources and perspective she provides with her work.
There's been a theme for us lately with our guests that is helping to connect our listeners to authors, comedians, performers, witches, whoever, people who can share their stories and wisdom about how to best meet the moment we are in and resist in the tyrannical fascist takeover that is happening here in these United States right before our eyes. And still find time to remember self-care and find our own joy. As a disabled trans mask person myself, I find myself constantly just exhausted at the grief that I am feeling watching my country descend into fascism. And so I need to find the joy to keep existing, you know? All the effort that it takes to keep existing every day is so tough. So we hope that conversations like this and trying to find a mix of talking about what's bad, but also talking about enlightening and uplifting and encouraging things, we can help inspire, affirm, and encourage our queerdo community out there listening. And help you unplug from the constant noise of bad news and ground into the collective knowledge and wisdom of witchcraft with a scientific lens.
And speaking of trans resilience, we are very excited to announce that we have secured a location and a date for the third Trans Telethon. And that will be
Ooh.
happening, yeah, November 20th, 2025, which is Trans Remembrance Day, at the Serpent and Sparrow in Eugene, Oregon. This year, we are applying all the many lessons we have learned from the first two times putting on this benefit show for the Rainbow Railroad, and we are hoping to make this event a huge success that will help bring visibility to trans rights, center trans excellence and joy, and raise a lot of money for this organization that helps trans and queer people escape oppressive situations and access gender-affirming care. This year, I'm going to be stepping back from the stage limelight and working on the back end aspects of the show with the producing and fundraising. And all of our performers will be trans drag performers, comedians, and musicians, including Sarah Levy, who will be featured in an upcoming episode here on the podcast. Music will be provided by our co-host Ruby, who is leaning into her synth era. And we have an incredible lineup of talented drag artists and comedians who will be teaming up to bring you this variety show of trans creativity, tenacity, and joy. If you can't join us live, we will be streaming the event on our Twitch channel so our supporters all over the world can tune in, interact with the live show, and donate to this important cause.
If you want to help support our work here at the Science Witch podcast, including helping us produce this year's Trans Telethon, check out our Patreon, where we share bonus episodes, host a sticker exchange, and a myriad other offerings that our ADHD talents from the Fae compel us to put out into the world. At the $1 a month level, you will get access to bonus content like the short form essay series Who's in Bloom, with episodes about flowers in bloom. Written by Angel with original music composed by Ruby. Also, at this level, you can get access to Angel's yoga videos. They periodically post from their yoga practice and do not post anywhere else. This is also where you can access our full-length episodes early and without ads, and this is all for only $1 a month.
At the $5 a month level, we are bringing back our sticker exchange, and I'll be throwing in some extra stickers from past rounds, as well as some stickers from my partner Rick's stand-up comic material that we have been making to promote his work. So, if you like getting mail and you like stickers, this is a best way to get access to our original sticker designs by me and a variety of other artists. I still need to get the Etsy back up and working, which I am planning on doing once I get more stickers ordered and mailed out to our supporters at this level. Also, speaking of Rick, we are going to be launching a new podcast project that will be only available via Patreon called Movies from Whenever, where Rick, my film school boyfriend, gets me to watch a movie I haven't seen from the entire history of filmmaking, and then we record our thoughts about it after we watch it together. We hope to have the first episode out in a few weeks, and this is the potential to become a separate podcast altogether, but we wanted to pilot the first few episodes on Patreon for our listeners to check out.
Then, at our highest level of support, the Science Witch Coven, you'll get access to Angel's online tarot practice over Zoom. They offer birth chart readings as well, which Enku will chime in on, especially now that the school semester is over. So, if you would like to book a 30-minute Zoom reading with Angel or get your chart read, check out this level of support. And of course, sharing and subscribing to the podcast helps us out a lot as well. We haven't mentioned this in a bit. But if you could also leave us a good review on Spotify or Apple Podcast, we'll feature it on our social media and it helps bring us up in the algorithm. If you're listening to connect with other listeners and looking for community, check us out on Discord, where you can share your witchy, sciencey interests and also share fun memes that help us laugh through all the absurdity.
Finally, if you want to find us on social media, you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Threads as the Science Witch Podcast. And also check us out on YouTube for our video podcast featuring our guests. Show notes and transcripts for this episode and others can be found on our website at sciencewitchpodcast.com. If you want to connect with us and hate social media, you can always email us at questions@sciencewitchpodcast.com. Until next time. Live long and prosper.
And blessed be.